Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps, and thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman. Call it a diet for a climate-changing planet. In the future, we'll be eating more potatoes, beans, and lentils, and less meat and animal products. And we'll be paying a lot more. That prediction is in a new report from UN scientists. But we're already getting a glimpse of things to come as costs rise and food grows scarcer. Recently, there have been food riots and demonstrations in several North African countries. Gerald Nelson is an agricultural economist and senior research fellow at the International Food Policy Research Institute.
We are currently, as of January in 2011, looking at price levels that are about the same as they were at the peak in 2008. And 2008 was the year that we saw a few governments change and food riots in the streets of several countries. The thing that makes the spikes particularly bad from an insecurity perspective is the sudden change. You know, if things change gradually, we can adapt. We can find ways to, you know, try different systems. But if all of a sudden the prices go from, you know, $1 for a loaf of bread to $2 for a loaf of bread and your monthly income is only $10, you're in real trouble in terms of being able to feed yourself and feed your family. So it's these sudden shifts in prices that cause the political unrest that we've seen in the past, 2008, and while I hope we don't see it in 2011, it's certainly a possibility.
So why is the price of food going up these days?
Well, a variety of reasons, but for the most part, the drivers of the high prices at the moment are various kinds of weather-related shocks. The Russian drought and high temperatures of last summer, the floods in Bangladesh, the floods in Australia, all of these are causing wheat prices to go up. In the United States, the USDA just released a new report that suggests the grain stocks in the U.S. are shorter than expected, caused partly by weather. And there's some other weather-related phenomena around the world that are causing various markets to spike upwards and likely to continue to go up, I think.
Well, weather comes and goes. What about this wild card of climate change? How does that affect agriculture?
Well, we're not to the point we can say these particular things that we're seeing right now or that we saw in 2008 can be attributable directly to climate change. But we can expect to see more of these kinds of events in the future. And so I think we should look forward to a future with more of these price spikes and more uncertainty about what's going to happen to the availability of food in any particular year.
This stuff has deep and widespread national security implications.
Indeed. I was at a meeting yesterday where some of the members of the National Security Agency of the United States were asking questions about, well, what does this really mean for our United States national security, not to mention threats to the rest of the world? Obviously, the short answer is it's a complicated question and we don't know. But we've seen governments lose their power as a result of the food price spikes in the past. And if some of the dire predictions on the consequences of climate change, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa take place, then we could see substantial, for example, migration events happening, a lot more climate migrants than we currently have environmental migrants, and the risk of domestic strife in those countries plus spilling over into the rest of the world is something that the intelligence agencies are already concerned about. I am cautiously optimistic that we can deal with the challenges coming by 2050. But if we get beyond 2050 and we haven't dealt with greenhouse gas emissions, then I'm really worried.
The two drivers that people are looking at towards the year 2050, population increases, there are more mouths to feed, I guess about 9 billion people by 2050, and then income growth, that people are making more money and they're going to want to eat higher on the hog.
Yeah, that's right. And add to that fact that most of the increase in population is going to take place in what we call the developing countries today. But you'll also have much of the income increase taking place in those locations. So you've got kind of a double whammy from the population and income growth heading in particular parts of the world. And with great uncertainty, it still seems likely that those places are going to be the places that will suffer more from climate change than what we call the developed countries today.
And these are places where they haven't contributed that much to climate change.
That's correct. Those countries have very low emissions. And so in some sense, they haven't contributed to the problem that we have today. But it's also the case that as they grow and their agriculture sectors are expected to produce more food, if they adopt the same practices that we're using in the North, in the rich countries of today, then there will be a lot more greenhouse gas emissions. And so they need to think about being carbon negative in their agricultural sectors. That is, not only reducing and eliminating their greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture, but actually taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and putting it in the ground, increasing the soil carbon. We're not there yet in terms of saying this, we have the magic bullet or a set of magic bullets, but I think we're going to have to find them if we're going to deal with global warming.
We've been talking with Gerald Nelson. He's an agriculture economist and senior research fellow at the International Food Policy Research Institute in Washington, D.C. Mr. Nelson, thank you.
Thank you.